Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. And Jim, our good martini today is unfortunately the result of what is probably a bad martini and has been in the last few weeks, and that's the president's push towards much more restrictive gun laws. But the good martini is that Americans still are very strongly supportive of the Second Amendment. We see it in most of the polls, even though about half think they might be able to tweak around the edges on some of these laws. We'd probably disagree with most of that. But when you look at the number of sales going on in some of these states, particularly in states where the governors and Democratic legislatures are also looking to crack down on guns, and just the number of people who see the value of self-defense in the wake of horrific events like Newtown, it's good to see that, to a large extent, the American instinct of self-defense, taking responsibility for your family and your home's protection, still very, very strong.
One of the things that's kind of fascinating about this is how rarely pro-gun control politicians really look at this and really contemplate, you know, why do people go on rushes to buy their guns whenever they start talking about gun control? What it really comes down to is no matter how much the gun control folks can say that they only want sensible gun control, sensible limitation, most Second Amendment advocates and supporters and gun owners really don't believe them. And there was evidence of this yesterday when liberal columnist Richard Cohen was saying that it is a fine and sturdy liberal goal to disarm all, to ban the ownership of handguns and to prosecute anyone who refuses to turn in their handguns to the state. You know, I mean, when people openly are saying stuff like that, you're going to have a whole bunch of gun owners who just flat out don't believe, oh, it's only this tiny measure we want to enact. We still believe in the right to own a firearm, et cetera, et cetera. As a result of that, people's attitudes will look, if I go and I get the gun, it's a lot harder for the government to take the gun from me than to ban me from getting it in the future. So it's a little bit like the way amnesty talk tends to fuel new waves of illegal immigration. Telling people that you won't let them buy a gun in the near future makes them run out and do it. And we saw this right after Obama's election. We saw this right after Obama's inauguration. Every time, you know, it's like stimulus and response. And the pro-gun control folks never really seem to grasp that. I talked about this in the Morning Jolt. Chris Saliza says that, look, there's right now two conversations going on about guns. One is the one in what he calls the Acela Corridor, basically from Boston to Washington, D.C., in which there's, you know, overwhelming support for gun control. Generally, these states and localities have very strict gun control laws to begin with, even though they may have significant crime rates nonetheless. And the rest of the country, which has a very different conversation about gun control. When Wayne LaPierre talked about putting armed guards or cops in schools, the liberal media almost as one acted like this was the nuttiest idea in the history of the world. Now, lo and behold, here comes a Washington Post poll that says actually a majority of Americans support it. Independents are about evenly split. And, you know, this is by no means a crazy, wacky idea. And, oh, by the way, the Biden and his group of people studying the gun issue were looking at that option, too. So you have this knee-jerk hostility to the NRA and to gun owners as a whole, which I think we're going to probably see more of from the president today. And, you know, where the rubber meets the road of Americans actually owning firearms, they're voting. You know, see that, you know, the old saying of they voting with their feet. They're voting with their dollars. They're making very clear that they will not give up their firearms and they will resist any government effort to take away those firearms.
Yeah, in his pathetic press conference on Monday, the president, when asked about the fact that sales are through the roof, basically said it's scare tactics on the part of the pro-gun lobby, and retailers are obviously looking to make a buck. No, Mr. President, we simply cherish our freedoms and are trying to make sure we can exercise those to the greatest extent possible. So,
notice Obama never really asked, let's assume for the sake of argument it is scare tactic. Why is that tactic working? Is it that gun owners are drones, that they're easily picked and you know, that they're somehow less smart than you know, wise people like Barack Obama who live surrounded by armed security their entire lives? Or is it that they've, based on past experience, based on looking at, you know, the history of gun control efforts in this country, that they don't believe that they're going to have one small short measure, and they believe that the ultimate effort is to eliminate the illegal possession of firearms? There's few people in Washington who examine themselves and their own positions as infrequently as Barack Obama does.
On to martini number two now, and also going back to Monday. Our faithful listeners may remember that in our crazy martini, we're talking about how Chuck Schumer said that gun retailers should voluntarily give up selling assault rifles until this whole thing is settled legislatively. Jim alluded to the fact that that was kind of a bullying tactic, but he decided to hold off full judgment on that issue because, after all, Chuck Schumer was a very pivotal vote on the nomination of Defense Secretary nominee Chuck Hagel. Well, unfortunately, yesterday, before the hearings even started, Schumer announced that he was, in fact, supportive of the Hagel nomination, meaning that most of the liberals in the Senate who might have been tempted to vote against Hagel due to his position on Israel and Iran and so forth, looks like that's starting to erode and probably that he will be confirmed, although I don't know that we can count the votes officially to 50 or 51. But Jim, your thoughts on Schumer giving in, and if you would like to finish your commentary on his previous topic, you're welcome to do so, too.
Thanks for nothing, pal. Senator Schumer remains one of the dumbest members of the U.S. Senate, which is really saying something. And his urging of stores to stop selling assault weapons was indeed bullying, was indeed an effort to force through social pressure what he could never pass through or will not be able to pass through legislative pressure and through force of law. Thanks for nothing, pal. It really does frustrate folks who were wary of Hagel because it's not like there's anything really all that. I mean, Hagel's now saying all the right things, but you'd expect him to say all the right things. The only way, he kind of knew that you had to say the right things to at least provide some cover for Chuck Schumer. I think the people who are skeptical of Hagel aren't persuaded at all about these things that he's saying right now. But for Chuck Hagel, it's enough. And, there's a lot of people who speculate that the White House leaned on him heavily because they needed, they wanted Chuck Hagel very badly. And they knew that, Schumer was the key vote. If he's good enough for Chuck Schumer, there are very few Democrats who are going to be able to say they can't vote for Chuck Hagel. So chances are the odds of Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel have gone up considerably. And if he ends up making some decisions in office that greatly complicate our relationship with Israel or frustrate our efforts to provide stability in the Middle East, we'll be able to point to Chuck Schumer and say, well, there you go. You got what you wanted. You listened to the White House and hopefully none of us will pay the price too badly, but it could very well end up going very badly for Israel and for the United States.
Jim, whether it's trying to rely on pro-life Democrats to hold up Obamacare or Chuck Schumer to hold up the Chuck Hagel nomination, pinning
guys
your hope
like Joe Manchin on guns. Yes, yes, there's a strange pattern here, isn't it? I've irritated some of my friends at the NRA when I've insisted that there is no such thing as a conservative Democrat. They always fall in line when Nancy Pelosi or when Harry Reid needs them to. Here is just one more example of that, and that's why, I'll take a not-so-great Republican over a Democrat who claims to be good around election time and then tends to shift to the left once they're safely in office.
All right, on to martini number three now, and this one should come as no surprise. Most of you will have seen it already played out, perhaps by the time you hear our take on it here. But later this morning, as we record this, President Obama is set to make his big gun control pitch, talk about the executive orders he plans to take and the legislative action he's going to be pushing on the Hill. None of that comes as a big surprise. We knew it was coming. But we also found out on Tuesday, Jim, and I guess this shouldn't be a huge shock either, the president is going to milk this for all it's worth today. He's going to surround himself with kids and kids who have written letters from around the country, some of whom those letters were released today with very small children with very detailed knowledge of gun policy. So I'm not sure how many of them wrote the letters, but some of them probably did. And the president is obviously using this to tug at the heartstrings rather than to focus fidelity to the Constitution when it comes to the Second Amendment and so forth. And so, the exploitation of kids probably isn't new in politics, but on an issue as sensitive as this, it just shows that the president is willing to do just about anything to get his way here.
The stagecraft of arguments has gotten a lot more transparent in this area. You may have heard that Ben Shapiro got into it pretty antagonistically with Piers Morgan of CNN the other night. A lot of people felt like Shapiro got the better of the argument there. And so Piers Morgan invited him back, but he wanted him to be in a town hall format in which the audience would be families of gun violence victims. Talk about stacking the deck. And basically, it's not so much that he wanted Shapiro there for an interview or a conversation, so much as a ritualized public stoning to basically let the audience, stacking the audience with folks who already know exactly what they think, who'll be rooting for Piers Morgan, from day one. That's effectively what's going on here with the president bringing in, children who wrote letters to the White House calling for gun control. Now, here's the thing. I don't know if I should believe that children should be writing letters to the White House. And if they are, look, kids are kids. You really shouldn't be trying to drag them in as political pawns or as props for a press conference or something like that. Let kids be kids. Stop dragging them into our politics. And it's so obviously, look, they're there to make it look like the president stands with kids and his opponents clearly hate children, you know. It's frustrating and rather transparent about this. I remember way back when one of our former contributors for National Review, Rod Dreher, wrote a book called Crunchy Conservatism, which was his effort to kind of reinvent conservatism in a couple of different ways. And one of the things that I remember, you know, giving him some grief about is he genuinely believed that all of the policy proposals that he was putting forth, some of whom were deviating from traditional conservatism, some of them weren't. But he said, look, they're all the best interest of the children. And I said to him, do you understand how like that just rings a bell in our heads of most conservatives that don't trust whoever's saying this?
Right.
And I don't doubt that, you know, Rob is doing his very best when they genuinely believe that, except that everybody can, you know, says their policy views are the best interest of the children. Reducing the capital gains tax, you could say, is in the best interest of the children. And so what it is it's a very emotional argument, an effort to tug at the heartstrings instead of let's actually look at what the proposal on the table is, how it would actually change the laws, and whether it would do any good. And instead it turns into, if you don't like us, you hate kids. And, well, you know, there are people who love kids on both sides of every issue. But, you know, this is kind of a transparent stage managing of this issue, and I hope Americans can see through it. But, you know, at this point, it's an open question, Greg.
Yeah, absolutely. I know close to 51% anyway are pretty easily gullible in this country. So turns out that this might be another repeat of that on this issue. Hopefully not. Again, well done, America, by the way. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.